The Why Me Project, an exclusive presentation of Faith Strong Today.
Episode number
152.
And we've officially celebrated our 3-year anniversary.
I know, I can't believe it.
And it's day number 438 of quarantine. And this is the life that we live.
It is. But I must say that with everyone being at home a whole lot more, it's really amazing seeing just people's natural creativity coming to life.
Sure. No, that's fair. And if you're going to be creative, you can always listen to the podcast. It gives you a half hour, 45 minutes to just kind of do what you need to do and have us in the background.
Yeah.
And mentally, whatever you're going through, if you need somebody to talk to, we'd encourage you to reach out, whether it's to us or somebody else. You can always email us, whymeproject@outlook.com. We'd love to talk with you, or on our socials, it is at whymeproject.
Yeah, exactly. And so today I'm really excited because on the topic of art, I have known this amazing woman for years, but we've never actually really talked.
Which is interesting.
Uh-huh. I know. Like, youth groups, you know, she was older and I was younger, so I was obviously intimidated. And she was so amazingly creative even then that this is just a real treat for me to dive into her life, her story, and her art.
Different forms of therapy, different forms of being creative. Giselle Denis, how are you?
Doing good.
We like to ask this skill testing question as we do each and every week because we never know where it's going to go. Giselle, who are you and where did you come from?
Good question. Well, So I'm born and raised in Edmonton and been here ever since. And it's been a bit of a great place to kind of plot myself down and move forward with my career here.
Well, you are a painter. I've seen your work online. I've seen it at the farmer's market. It's so bright, so beautiful and colorful. Was this something that you always wanted to do, or did this just develop over time?
I knew it would be something that I would always do my whole life, regardless of what I chose to do as like a full-blown career. I explored other options. People tell you things, you know, you can't be an artist for a job, like you have to find something. But when, for me, I didn't, I guess, realize how it impacted me. So my mom is an artist. So I grew up in an artist's home and was very influenced by her and not pressured by her to do it as a career. But I was just always painting, always drawing, always creating something and being influenced by her. And so, and my father's also very creative. He does sculpture and things like that with metal.
Wow.
And my folks always encouraged me to do my best, of course, but they never pressured me to get like a real job. They always just said, my dad always said, have a marketable skill. He really pushed that my whole life. And so he kind of instilled in me entrepreneurial thought. That kind of interested me and always got me excited about building and making something with my own hands. And then eventually, because my mom did sell her work throughout her career too, so she'd have an art show and then put a few of my things in there and people would buy them. And I remember at quite a young age, about 14, I was developing my skill of drawing quite a bit. Realism actually is what she does, which is that high detailed, like it looks like it, exactly like that person's face. And so she kind of showed me things and how to develop that skill. And at about 14 years old, people were paying me like pretty good money to do their portraits and stuff. So that got me really excited because I enjoyed making something with my own hands and then getting paid to do it, which I thought, well, I'm wrecked for life now. This is pretty awesome. And so probably around 16 years old, I started as much as I could involve myself while I was in school, of course, but be part of as many art shows and events and festivals and things as I could think of on my free time and develop, you know, getting better at showcasing what I do, showing my work, being vulnerable, showing your art to the world. That can be scary for a lot of artists, especially at the beginning. Like, it's kind of like your soul on canvas, right? So worried about what people would say. But I never really cared if people didn't like it. I just had enough encouragement from the people around me that told me that I was talented and stuff. And when you're young and people tell you you're talented, it didn't really clue in to me that much. It's just something I heard a lot when it came to art. But then I got pretty confident in, as I got older, just more and more events, like the more I did it, the better I got at it and showcasing it. And so I just was always interested in creating. And I did well in school, but I had to work really hard to get like all of the academic courses. I worked really hard. Like my friends would they hardly studied, and they'd get 90s, and I'd have to work so hard to get an 80 in math and social and all those classes, and it drove me crazy. And so now I remember my friends saying to me, and people I kept up with on Facebook and stuff, they'll say, like, no, I always remember you. You were in the art room. Always in the art room in high school. Like, all of us would be out around the corner, like, smoking and partying and going to the mall or whatever, just not really paying attention to our courses. And there you'd be in the art room all the time. And so I fit in because I played sports. I loved sports. I was very athletic. As many things as I could do with the sports in high school and stuff. And actually, for a time, wanted to be a short distance runner. I wanted to be in the Olympics. So I was always very, like, focused, disciplined. I went to provincials and I was doing really well. But then I kind of came to a crossroads of, like, what's important. And then I discovered music, and I went to music for a long time. I studied at Northwest Bible College. I took the music program. So I did the music ministries at the time when it was called Northwest. It's Vanguard now. And so I did 4 years of music. All of my friends were going to Bible college at the time. And I thought, well, I love music. I'm going to take the music. I wasn't typically or terribly interested in all the other classes, but the music side of it really interested me. So I actually sang and played piano with a black gospel choir. You may have heard of them, Triumphant Sound, for quite a few years, from the age of 12 to 21. I was part of this choir that traveled around all of Canada. We went to the States, and we performed at the Windspear in the Jubilee Auditorium, and we did all kinds of amazing things. Agnes Brown was the choir director. She was at Sherwood Park Pentecostal Church. She influenced me huge as well, not just with music, but just, like, being a decent human. She was just like my aunt. She was like everybody's aunt. And so a huge role model for me, and she always encouraged me in my art and music. So when it comes to, like, creative stuff, I love it all.
When I think of practice, when I think of athletes, and athletes practice every day and they try to hone their skills, or musicians do the same thing, I'm not an artist. I draw a stick man not very straight. How does somebody practice or update their skills or become a better artist?
By doing it every single day. You get out of it what you put into it, just like anything. So if you say you want to be an Olympic runner, but you're only really doing, you know, one race every year, and you only go out and jog, you know, twice a week for half an hour, well, there's a guy around the corner who's doing twice as much as you. And then that guy, there's someone doing twice as much as him. And so how do these people end up being, like, world-class, famous people that just excel, and because they're disciplined? I mean, of course, we all can struggle with discipline, but I guess you have to love it. If you don't love it, don't do it.
If we went back in time to, like, junior high or high school, was your math book just doodles and artwork, or would you have been, like, actually paying attention?
Yeah, honestly, it was hard to pay attention. Like, I daydream a lot then and now. I'm, you know, it's just it's discipline, but then it's also allowing yourself to really be who you are. Not every painter, back to the art thing, artist thing, not every painter should be a full-time artist. Just because you're talented and can paint doesn't necessarily mean you have the personality or the drive to do it full-time. Just, like, do you know what I mean? Like, people look at it from a different lens when they're looking from the outside in. I guess this is kind of the why me question. Like, it's just been a lot of, for me, a lot of failure all the way. to finding success.
It doesn't look like failure.
I know, and it doesn't, because I work so hard. But people don't. I don't really talk about all the time. I mean, one on one, I do, but to people, about all the things that, all the struggle and the hustle that it takes to do it full time. And that's why I tell people, like, well, if you want to do it full time, like, you really need to love it. You need to, like, eat, breathe, sleep, everything, painting. If you want to do it. And that's, like, you look at actors. Like, I love listening to podcasts and hearing successful people's stories and things. And you're just like, man, it didn't happen to this person overnight. What the people don't see is, like, the years behind all of the struggling to make it, and, you know, to do well. There's still times now, like, I'm a full-time career artist and have been for quite some time. But I still have weeks or months or days in between sales, and you're just like, oh my gosh, like, is the phone ever going to ring again? Am I ever going to get another email? Isn't a painting ever going to sell? Because, like, for example, one example for the struggle and the why me is, like, people don't see all the gallery rejections I get, all the proposal rejections I get, all the grant rejections I get. I've never once received a grant. I've never once received a yes from a reputable gallery. And so do I take that as failure? Well, on the outside, I can take it and absorb it as failure and let it get to me and make me want to quit and whatever. Or I can say, like I did a long time ago, well, if a gallery's not going to sell it for me, I guess I'm going to have to figure this out on my own. And I did. I figured it out. I figured out a way that I like to proceed. How am I going to make this work so I enjoy it? Okay, one example. Quite a few years ago, there was this cafe just off Jasper Ave. Friends of mine opened it. It was called Axis Cafe. And there's a farmer's market around the corner from there. So I was showing my art in the cafe. They were saying, you know, we're doing this farmer's market to promote the coffee shop. Let's sell coffee at the farmer's market. Do you want to put your art in our booth at the farmer's market downtown on 104th Street? And I said, yeah, sure. So I would be down there with my art in the back. And it's funny because people are like, oh, this is amazing. You have your art sale. That's super cool. And whatever. And then, you know, and then the next 35 people that come by, they're like, hey, can I get a coffee? They don't even look at the art. And I'm like standing there going, am I seriously just standing here selling coffee? And so, like, if the lady selling the coffee had to go run to get more, I'm the one standing there. And it's like, hey, can I get a coffee? Where's your cream? Don't you have fresh cream? And then they're, like, getting mad at you. And you're like, oh, my gosh, what am I doing here? What am I doing? Why am I selling it on the street? Like, it just felt like a failure. Like, here I am with my art on the street. But then I did that for, like, I think 10 or 11 years. I showed my art at the farmer's market there and a number of other festivals and things, everything I could think of. The art walk on White Avenue I've been part of for more than 20 years. And yeah, like 100 people might walk by and not notice, but it only takes one person to look at something and go, that's beautiful. I love that. I could see that on my wall. Here's money. And I still get a jolt of adrenaline inside me when someone likes something enough that I made with my own hands that they want to buy and put on their wall. Like it still makes me go like, wow. Okay, like I thought of something in my head, I put it out there, I made it, and someone wants to buy that. I still, like, even after all these years, I'm quite shocked that people want to do that. And I'm so grateful for every single sale that I make. And so, yeah, I kind of made a way. I made a way with the market. It was there, it was available. I put myself into all the things that I could think of to be part of, and it really paid off. Like, I mean, probably for, I don't know, 10 years, I was making like $7,000 a year, and I was thrilled. You know, and the next year might have been 9,000 and the next year was 15 and I was thrilled. And that's like below the poverty line. Like, what was I so happy about? That I was doing what I loved. And when you're doing what you love and you love it to the point where you like, you say, you eat, breathe and sleep the thing that you're doing so much that you just, it doesn't matter if you're selling anything. All the money in the world can't make you happy, right? It's like your mindset. So I just decided that I loved it and I wanted to pursue it and keep doing it. And I'm one of those people that I have to paint. Like if a few days goes by and I didn't paint, I get like agitated. I feel like shaky inside and like, it's like that runner's, thing.
The runner's high.
Yeah.
Like days can go by and if you didn't run, like your body feels it and you gotta release the energy somewhere.
I don't know what that's like at all. Let me ask you this, though, because you had talked about being vulnerable. What is being vulnerable as an artist? What does that look like? Is it because people are judging your paintings?
Oh, for everything. I've heard it all. So especially now with social media and being able to put out there. So I used to put out the painting, like when social media began, I put the painting out with the title, the size and the price. And even with just that information, you can hear all of the comments. Most of them are lovely, but you remember the few, they stand out, right? The ones that are negative and criticizing, like, oh, criticizing that, who do you think you are? You think you're the best painter in the world? Mm. Or how could you charge that much for a painting? I've heard it all, trust me. All the negative things. And now even more so because I'll post a painting on my social media and then I'll talk about it. I'll give a little blurb about it. And most comments are great. And then you get the odd one that it's like a little knife pokes the surface of your skin. And then another one comes in a couple months later. And then a few days later, another one comes in. And eventually it pokes through and you bleed a little bit and it hurts. And I don't get me wrong, people can be amazing. And usually they are. Usually people are great. But there's always people out there who are jealous, who are, and I look at the motive and I think, okay, well, I'm putting myself out there. I'm being vulnerable enough to share my thoughts. My thoughts aren't necessarily, this is the only thought for this idea. this isn't the only thing about creativity. This isn't the only thing about truth. This isn't the only thing about love that I'm saying. I'm just saying this is my opinion about what this painting is and why I called it this. And here's a story about it. People can get pretty nasty with, like, how could you say that? And whatever. I'm not saying controversial things. I'm very, like, pretty, like, straight ahead, straightforward things I'm saying. But the most recent one, I talked about it, actually, is people have said, Giselle, life's not just, because my work's all about hope and positivity. People say, like, Giselle, life's not just about butterflies and unicorns and rainbows. Like, life's not like that. Real life's not like that. I'm like, I know that. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just putting out there these images, and it's not about the flowers. It's not about the trees. It's not about the scene I'm painting. It's the intent behind what I'm doing. I get hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of messages from people. The painting they got, or the mural they see downtown of mine, how it, like, they walked around the corner and they were having a really bad day. Like, they just found out they miscarried, or they just lost a loved one, or, you know, they have someone who's sick in the family or something. And they walked by and they saw this painting, and it was like God spoke to them and said, it's going to be okay. And they'll tell me, and my being vulnerable of putting myself, my creative person, my creative energies on canvas opens up everybody else to be, it gives them an opportunity to be vulnerable also. Like, I just received a message yesterday, and the lady told me, I was scrolling through my Instagram and your image popped up, and I literally gasped and tears shed on my face. And I am not a crier. I am not emotional. I do not, like, I don't put myself out there that way. Like, that is not me at all. But I just wanted you to know how this painting on a screen affected me. And I was like, holy, that's crazy. A long time ago when I started, I knew that these paintings weren't just for me. When I hear artists who, like, no, I never show my art. I never put it out there. It's just too scary. Like, I think, you know what? You need to get past that, because you have a talent that needs to be shared with the world. It's not just for you. Like, at the beginning when I started selling my art, I was like, I cried. I drove home from a client's house and I'm bawling my eyes out, because at the time I may have had 30 paintings for sale. Well, now on any given day, I have like 250 paintings for sale. Like, my productivity is huge. Like, I make around 450 paintings a year now.
Wow.
That's me painting every day. And that's, you know, technically more than one a day. And sometimes I'll do five a day. Sometimes it's 10. Sometimes it's one. And then a couple days will go by and I'm busy with life and meetings and grocery shopping or whatever. And I don't paint. But back to what I was saying is that when I first would let them go, I would cry. And I still can sometimes get emotional with, like, oh, man, I've had that piece for like a year and a half. Like, I'm going to miss it, or I just painted it yesterday, or it's still wet on the easel and it just sold. I didn't even have time to, like, nurture this thing and enjoy it in my own home. Like, it's already sold. Like, when I'm painting live sometimes, it'll be still wet and someone will buy it because they've watched me make it. So it's just constantly reminding myself, these aren't just for me. I wasn't given this gift to hoard it, mm-hmm. to keep it for myself. And it'll bless somebody in some way. It'll speak to someone in some way. And it might continue to speak to that person. I have a lady I just did a commission painting for, and she specially ordered it for her 10th anniversary with her husband, and she's surprising him. And it's like all of these symbolisms in the painting of 10 years and of marriage together. And I think, you know, this painting, I hope, speaks to them continually on their wall. And sometimes I'm like, oh, man, I've got to be like, I got to make a great painting. Like, this person's going to, I'm going to have it for 10 hours in the studio, they're going to have it on their wall for the next, you know, 50 years.
Yeah,
this better be a great painting. So there's that vulnerability too of like, man, I got to make a great painting.
At what point did you realize that this was going to be a full-time venture for you?
I kind of decided when I got married. It's been almost 17 years now. And when I got married, we were poor. my husband, he has a job he works for the city, so it's a very stable job. And he carried our finances. He carried us through that whole time of me trying to figure it out. And at the time, I had a part-time job. I was house cleaning. So I had my own. I didn't have any employees. It was just myself. I did the old-fashioned way. I walked door-to-door to houses around the neighborhood and put out a little flyer that I photocopied at Staples and offered to clean people's houses. And got enough customers. Did that, and I made good money at the time when I thought was good money. and I I cleaned houses for the first 5 years of us being married, and I hated it. Mm. It was the worst. But I only cleaned in the morning, so I had the afternoon to paint. And I thought, okay, I'm going to do this for 1 year. I'm going to house clean for 1 year, and then I'm going to be a full-time artist. Well, 5 years went by, and I was like, I cried every day. By the end, I was scrubbing people's toilets going, like, I was not destined for this. I was destined for so much more. But I was selling here and there. I was selling a painting. But I was getting pretty busy with all the things that I was being part of to try and sell my art at the festivals and the farmers markets and art walks. One summer, I said to myself, okay, after the 5 years, I told my clients, I'm going to try and do art full-time for this summer. If I can make that same money with art sales as I was with cleaning sales, I'm not going to come back. But if it doesn't go well, I'll come back. And they all said to me, Giselle, you're not coming back. So I tried it, and I never looked back. It was the best decision I'd ever made. So that's kind of when, almost 17 years ago, that would have been 12 years ago, I kind of thought, this is it. But I wasn't making very much. But I was happy not cleaning and happy just having the whole day just to paint, just to prepare for the next event where I'd show my work. And then opportunity kind of comes up when you put yourself out there that you don't really necessarily see ahead of you. So at the farmer's market, like, who knew this little artist at the farmer's market would one day do this humongous commission for this beautiful restaurant called the Wildflower Grill. This lady walked by, and it was like 10-second meeting. She walked by, kind of threw her card on the table. She's like, I'm opening up a restaurant. It's called the Wildflower Grill. I need paintings made. You're perfect for it. Call me. And she walked away. And I was like, what the heck? Who is that? So I was excited but also afraid, because I thought, like, if you let, like, the feeling of I'm not ready, I'm not good enough, who am I? Like, how could I, you know, do I measure up to the expectations? Can I take on a project like this? It was scary, but I called her. I met with the executive team. Oh my gosh, designers. And I was sitting in there. I just kind of faked it till I made it. I walked in there and I'm like, oh my gosh, like, I was so nervous. And this boardroom, I don't know boardrooms. I've never been in a boardroom in my life. And I sat down with all these executives and they're like, okay, so we'd like you to make, you know, the art for the restaurant, and, you know, we need whatever, 10 paintings, and we need them in 6 weeks. Can you do it? And I'm like, yep, totally, absolutely. And I got in my car and I'm like, oh my God, how am I going to do this? And why did they pick me? I don't know. The lady saw something, and I don't know. She saw something and she believed I could do it. And so I just decided, well, if she saw that I could do it, I guess I could too. So I made them, delivered them. And the initial quote I was going to give them, my husband said, no, double it. And I said, you're crazy. I can't call that guy and tell him this is how much it's going to be. I can't do it. He's like, yes, you can. So I got off the phone with my husband and I phoned the owner and I said, like, with all the confidence I could muster and my calmness and freaking outness, I just told him this is how much it's going to cost. And he's like, no problem. Get started. I'll send you a check right away. I'm like, oh my word. And I got off the phone and, like, just about fainted and just was like, what just happened? And I delivered the paintings after 6 weeks, and they're like, we need three more. I'm like, oh, we need them in 2 weeks. Okay, no problem. Here's the quote. No problem yet. Do it. Okay, sweet. It was just like a very fast. That happened, yeah, about 12 years ago. And then again, at the farmer's market, the places that things can happen, it's just crazy. Like, at the farmer's market, again, this lady was walking by, and she was looking for product to sell at the gift shop at the Fairmont Hotel at McDonald's. And so she said, yeah, can you come to this executive meeting and meet with our board and present your product? And we want to showcase your work. And so they were choosing people selling lotions and candles and products of whatever things. So I went to the meeting. Same thing. It was like, meet with executives in suits. And I'm just like, I don't know this world at all. Like, what am I doing here? Don't belong here. But they asked me to come. So I went to the meeting, and I'm watching them go around. There's a team of men in suits coming by and talking and interviewing the people selling the product in this big room. And one by one, they come. And I'm standing there, and I'm thinking, oh, my gosh. Because I thought, you know what? I had a different idea, a different approach for them. And I thought, well, here goes nothing. I got nothing to lose. So they came around to me, and I had my big paintings up behind me. I brought, like, three or four big pieces. I didn't have any product, quote-unquote, like, little product, trinkety things to sell. So I just said, I have a better idea. a different idea. Rather than selling products in a gift shop, which you have lots of, I could be your live painter at your hotel for your guests. I'll be entertainment. I'll make paintings. People can watch the process while they're having dinner, and that's it. And they can buy the painting if they want, but I'm here as entertainment for your guests. And they all kind of blinked slow and looked at me. Huh, that's a great idea. And then they kept moving on, and whatever, and we'll call you if we decide. So I left the meeting and thought, okay, like, they liked my idea, they liked me, like, great, like, that sounds good. And then a year went by, wow, and I didn't hear anything. Talk about, like, frustration. Like, I thought, what the heck happened? Like, I thought they liked me, so I felt completely deflated and rejected and all the things. And then one day on a Tuesday, I got a phone call, and they said, hi, Giselle, it's so-and-so from the Fairmont Hotel McDonald. We finally have approval for you to paint at the hotel. Can you start Thursday? And I'm like, what? I thought you forgot about me. Like, what? Like, all the thoughts, right? So I've been painting there every Thursday, Thursday nights from 5 o'clock till 8 o'clock or whenever time for, like, it'll be 6 years in June or July. Every week I show up and I paint for them. And before I proposed that idea to the men in suits, I had already been painting live for charities. And so that's another sort of opportunity, a window of opportunity that I saw that was potential to do some good with the thing I've been given, this thing, this talent, this whatever you want to call it, this thing that I do to help raise money for organizations. Like, I've always had a heart for that, but I've never had, like, millions to give. But I thought, maybe I can raise millions with my art for charities and stuff. So I've been doing that. And same thing at that same silly farmer's market. This lady walks by. This is before me painting at the Hotel Mac. She says to me, hi, my name's Glory. I have this charity called Little Warriors, and we had an artist paint at our event last year, and it raised like $15,000, and we really want you to come and paint at my next event. Call me. I'm like, what? And so a few months later, I find myself in Banff painting this giant 10-foot by 3-foot painting. It's the hugest painting I've ever made in my life. And I got to paint it in 2 days, and I got to sell it at a charity auction, like, uh-huh, with this auctioneer. And it was very scary. And I thought, what am I doing here? Like, why did she ask me to do this? And I was freaking out also because of how much the painting last year sold for. Like, I had never sold a painting for that much in my life. Like, nothing close to $15,000. Like, my paintings on average are like $3,000. So I took 2 days to paint the painting, and I literally finished it down to the second of the auctioneer going, and here we are now going live. We're going to start bidding at $1,000. Well, in a matter of like 20 minutes, my painting sold for $50,000.
Yeah, that's wow. Amazing.
And I'm like, what the heck? How did this happen? Like, and I didn't take a penny of that. All that money went to the charity. And I was thrilled, and I was lucky to have social media to tell everybody, like, oh my gosh, look at what my painting did. And I don't have $50,000 to give to a charity, but look what my painting just did. Like, yeah, that's incredible. And so since then, I thought, I kickstarted a campaign to raise $1 million for charity. My husband and I thought, like, why don't we just keep doing this? And I've live painted at so many different charities throughout the city and outside of the city, live painting. Like, I bring my stuff, I set up, make the painting from start to finish. People bid on it throughout the evening. And since I started that, like, I think in 2014 or 15, the paintings have raised almost $700,000.
Wow.
So I was like, okay, that's significant. Like, I'll just keep going and I'll try and raise $1 million in 10 years. And it's just because of generous people who see what I'm making and, like, they like the process and they like the concept. Yeah, this little silly artist who had this big idea to do something bigger than me. And that's the thing. Like, I'm always trying to think of things to do that are bigger than me that scare me. Like, it still scares me, but I just do it anyway. All the details will be worked out later. Just do it anyway. And so since I've been painting at the Fairmont 4 years ago, I was thinking, you know, it'd be really cool if I could paint in a different city, paint at a different hotel in a different city. So I looked for I reached out to so many different hotels abroad, and all of them said no. They all said no. And I guess when you're cold calling this thing that I do, it's not like a common thing that people do, live painting for an audience. People just like, well, do you want to come here and face paint? You're going to entertain the children? Like, and so to explain what I do, if you haven't seen it before, it's like, what is she doing? And so unless you've seen it and experienced it yourself, it's hard to, like, sell it, right? Pitch it. And so everybody said no, so there's a little failure for you. But our operations manager moved to Dubai, and he said, well, I'm at the Raffles Hotel here, Giselle. Why don't you come here and paint for the hotel here? You can come anytime, stay as long as you want, come and paint for the guests at the hotel. Bring your family, stay for a month if you want. So within, like, I don't know, 6 months, I found myself and my family, we were in Dubai painting at the Raffles Hotel. Raffles is part of Accor, which owns Fairmont and Swiss Hotels and Raffles Hotels, so, and Sofitel. So I go there now. This is our fourth year. We've been back as a family, my husband and my 10-year-old son, and we stay at this hotel for a month. We live at the hotel, and my painting station is always set up for me, and I just paint for the guests as they come and go throughout the lobby. And that just happened because I was at a tiny little farmer's market in Edmonton, and I ended up at the Fairmont Hotel in Edmonton, and I ended up in Dubai. Like, it's pretty crazy. And I've been there 4 times now.
Most recently, though, there was a little bit of an issue, wasn't there?
Yeah. Are you talking about the flight?
The flight, everything. I just saw on Facebook with regards to COVID-19 and, you know, obviously the call to all Canadians who were international to come back home. What was that like experience-wise, being in Dubai and trying to get back home?
That was crazy, actually. This year was the most challenging, of course, with the virus. So things were shutting down, you know, more and more things were closing and less people around. And we watched the news and we were hearing things, but we weren't like, it wasn't that bad yet. But then, I think it was about 10 days before we were flying home, I got an email from Air Canada talking about my flight change, but it was leaving Frankfurt. And I'm like, oh my goodness, the system thinks we're in Frankfurt. And so my flight that I had purchased already to get my family to and from Dubai, Dubai to Edmonton, back to Edmonton, it was canceled. Like, it was not in the system anymore. Like, my flight ID didn't exist. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh. So obviously we tried phoning, couldn't get through for hours and hours and hours. You couldn't call. My husband went to the airport 3 times just to talk to someone. No one could help him. So we were literally left with, like, oh my word, like, our flight doesn't exist. How are we going to get home? And so he miraculously found flights for $7,500 to fly home one way.
Wow.
The 3 of us. So he bought emergency flights thinking, like, this is my only option right now. At least we'll get these. We'll get home. We'll worry about the money later. So then he said, you know what? You have a huge following on social media. Put it out there and tell people what's going on. Maybe someone can help us. So I basically said, like, does anyone know anyone who works for Air Canada that can help us get home? Like, I don't have flights right now. Oh, my gosh. The response was crazy. I probably had, like, 40 or 50 flight representatives reach out to me. But the one lady who was the highest up, she was an international flight specialist, complete stranger. She messages me on Facebook. She says, Giselle, I can help you. This is all we need to do. I just need your information, your flight number. We're going to refund the flight you just bought, and we're going to get you on a new flight home a day early. It was only a day early. And I'm like, are you serious? Within probably 5-6 hours, she had it fixed. And in the meantime, I had a travel agent contact me, called me from Edmonton, and talked me off the cliff. She's like, there's honestly nothing I can do for you, but I can help you with options. So while I'm waiting for the other lady to fix stuff, she's talking to me. And I said to her, I'm going on and on and on about the details. And I said, you know what? Never mind. I'll let you check the system. I'm going to stop talking now. She said, you know what, Giselle? No. You keep talking. You talk this through. This is going to help you feel better. She talked to me for like an hour and a half, another complete stranger. And I thought, oh my gosh, these two angels came into my life. They fixed everything. So obviously we got home safely. Flying was scary. Like, the airports, like, everything was empty. Hmm. Our flight was pretty full. But, you know, you're just like worried, like, it's just scary traveling. And there, just before we got on our plane, actually, there was a guy in the airport, like, screaming on his phone, like, like, yelling and swearing and screaming on the phone. And it was quite alarming, like, this man freaking out. At first it was entertaining, and then I thought, oh my gosh, this lunatic is on my flight. Like, this guy is dangerous. And I'm just like, oh my gosh, what are we gonna do? So we get on the plane, we sit down, and within 10 minutes he marched off the plane. And I pulled the flight attendant aside. I said, excuse me, ma'am, but that guy is unstable. I just want you to know, like, this is what happened in the airport. And she said, oh, don't even worry. She's like, we kicked him off the plane. He got kicked off the flight.
Wow.
So many people complained. She's like, no, you're not the only one. All these people were telling us, and we can't have someone like that flying. So we were protected from potential, like, danger. I don't know. Maybe he was harmless, but his behavior was so scary. So anyway.
You've had a chance to travel around the world. You can go to GiselleDenis.com and see your paintings and your live paintings and that. Do you look at art differently being an artist?
I probably do. I mean, because I'm a painter, I probably look at paintings in a more detailed way, just like if you're an actor, you probably watch movies differently. If you're a chef, you probably, you know, eat food differently. So, yeah, I think I appreciate the things, the approach more because I understand it more because I do it.
Sure.
I love art that's like thick and heavy textured like mine, but I also like different mediums that I could never do. Like, I mean, I shouldn't say that. I mean, everybody says, of course you could do it, but types of art that I'm like, I don't even know how they did that. That is just
like what?
Amazing and beautiful. Like sculpture, I wouldn't even know where to begin with sculpture. It probably looked like a preschooler did it if I did it.
There's probably a niche for that, though.
Yeah, probably is.
You never know.
Yeah. I don't do much realism anymore. And so I can draw realism, but to paint it is a whole other ballgame. So to see like realism paintings that look like photographs, like I'm thinking, oh my gosh, like that person is so unbelievably talented. And so I like to appreciate things that I'm not, that wouldn't be something I'd be good at. Yeah, I think I do. I think I do look at it like anyone would if that's your thing that you do. You know, you'd appreciate it and look at it differently for sure.
How supportive has your family and your husband and your son been in this art journey?
Oh, amazing. My folks, especially like growing up, giving me that sense and feeling of like, do what you love and, you know, everything else will come into play, like never having the pressure from them to like have a smart career where you'll for sure make so much money. So my folks sound like for sure they've, and then to marry someone who at the beginning, he was marrying this artist who didn't know what she was doing, you know, wasn't, and I'm not still not the greatest painter, but I'm better now than I was. And when he first got married. And so having someone who believed in me to, yeah, quit my job. Oh my goodness, quit my job and do art full time. Like who lets their spouse do that? But I did well with it. Honestly, my husband believed in me before I ever did. And so did my parents. And having to live with someone like that is quite, I don't take that for granted at all. And my son, like the fact that we get to travel together. Like I chose, one of the reasons I chose to work to be an artist is because I love working from home. I don't like this whole being stuck at home business. I'm quite loving it.
So introverted.
I quite like it. And so, I mean, I'm not a homeschooler person. Like I don't want to do homeschooling, although we kind of are right now, but I wanted to stay home with my son when I had a child. So to be able to be home with my baby full time and try it, like there were times it was very hard. Of course it wasn't always fun, but to be able to not have to put him in daycare and, I know I realize people choose that and want to do that and stuff, but it wasn't for me for sure. So to be able to stay home with my son when he was young and just, when he naps, I go paint and I loved having that time. And I think I see that he loves hanging out with me. And then especially if we get to travel together, like if I have a job that's out of town, like we generally often go together and just make a weekend of it. And it's just great to be together. Like, we have quite a tiny little family. It's just the three of us. But yeah, I love having, we all get along really well. My husband and I have a really good relationship when it comes to like, he's managing the whole business side of things. He helps me with social media and marketing and logistics. And like today's interview, and he's like, did you prepare for the interview? Did you think about what they're going to ask you? I'm like, oh, right. I should probably, like I'm pretty spontaneous. So I come prepared, but I also like the just, I like that you didn't give me a whole load of questions beforehand. Like
it's
I like
because we don't plan these things, to be honest. It's all off the cuff.
Yeah.
We're letting people in behind. We're letting them behind the curtain.
We let people be who they are, and I think you get the best quality interviews and conversations when you just let people be who they are. And really, that's kind of what my life has been. Like, I've been fortunate to be around people who let me be who I am. I'm not great at a lot of things, but I'm great at this thing, and to be encouraged by people to just, people don't want you to be someone else. The world doesn't need you to be another blah, blah, blah. Like, for me, I've had people come to me and say, like, oh, I want to paint like you, and I want to be like you, and I want to have a career like you, and whatever. And I'm like, okay, you know what? The world doesn't need another Giselle. The world doesn't need another Holly. The world doesn't need another Johnny.
Are you sure?
Amen to that one.
Yeah. They may want to redo.
But you know what I mean? Like, the world doesn't need a bunch of people being someone they're not. You were made individually unique for a reason. And so I push people to find who that is and be that. You're not doing anyone any favors by being someone you're not. I've struggled with that because it's like, I'm not the greatest of whatever. I'm not great at this. I'm not great at that. And sometimes I can focus on the things that I'm not good at or things that don't come naturally to me, or, you know, even like public speaking or being on a podcast or stuff like that. I don't feel like I'm the most eloquent speaker or whatever, but people keep asking me to talk. So I'm like, okay, fine. I'll talk. Like, and I find when you're just yourself, people appreciate it even more so when you're just like, that's kind of what the paintings have been too. Like, when people say the negative things of like, well, is that all you paint is just flowers? And I'm like, oh my gosh, like, it's not, it's not about that. It's just about when you can paint a style and keep it, you've made it enough and put it out there enough and built it enough where people can look at it and recognize that that's a Giselle painting, then I think you're doing something right, is what I have to tell myself. Because, yeah, you can hear all the negative things that people want to say to you, but it's just like, but this is who I am, and I'm not going to apologize for it. I'm just going to keep doing it and keep making it, and hopefully it's making a difference.
Got a last one for you.
Sure.
Are your walls of your house your art or other people's art?
You'll have to come to my studio, guys. My next open house, when the world opens up again. It's actually, we bought the place. We renovated it from scratch, painted it all white, and every single square inch of every single wall has one of my paintings on, because I have open houses twice a year.
Oh, there you go.
And I use it as a gallery space. Now it's open to appointment like all year round. Like, I have visitors every couple of days, people like not right now, but during this time. But on a normal year or month, I have people weekly and daily coming to visit the studio, picking out pieces, or they'll say like, hey, I want to see these five pieces in my home. And then I'll fill my car and drive over and put it up on their wall and see what they think. But my open houses are like my being my own gallery. And so I'll have like 500 people come through my house in one day. Crazy on my open house days. And so I do one in July and one in November. So yeah, every square inch is covered with the painting on my walls. And then I have it up in numerous locations around the city as well. Paramount Hotel, the Matera Hotel, different law firms and design firms and things like that. But yeah, the reason is because it's like this wonky house with all these walls and it's covered in my art. I do have art by other artists that have given me things. And so I move the art around constantly. So there's always a new painting on a different wall. And yeah, but I'll have to for sure have you guys come and you can see for yourself.
Oh, this is happening.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. This is definitely happening.
I would love to have you.
November.
It's a great time. Yeah. November, July, usually in November.
Well, I don't know when things are going to
be positive, Holly.
Okay, July.
I know. Actually, July, I've had to get creative because I thought, well, what am I going to do if I'm not allowed to have an open house in July? And so what I'm going to do is a virtual, like a Facebook Live thing for a good portion of that day, and get dressed up and walk around my house and talk to people on the screen about the paintings I have on the wall, and kind of do like a one-on-one an open house, but whoever's not happens to be online at that time. Like right now, I've had to get creative also with my live painting Thursdays at Hotel Mac. So I do Facebook Live at 5 o'clock on Thursdays here from the studio. So live from the studio, you can watch me at 5 o'clock painting, and to keep people interested. So I have like, I've only done it twice now. On average, like 30 or 40 people watching, which is not bad. Maybe it'll grow from there, but hopefully, yeah, by November it'll open up again and I can have people through the studio. But that's what I just love, to be able with Facebook Live to stay up to date and show people what I'm doing. And you know, I'm usually painting for about 3 hours.
Okay.
So I just leave it on. And
my hand hurts just hearing that.
Your what?
My hand hurts just hearing that.
3 hours of painting.
Yeah.
Well, she is best at being authentically herself. GiselleDenis.com, at GiselleDenis Fine Art on social media, on Instagram, or at GiselleDenis on Twitter. We appreciate you taking some time and hanging out with us today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
I've kind of perused through all of her paintings. Even my wife last weekend was doing some painting, a new version for her bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just amazing to watch creatives like that create.
Exactly. I am not super creative, but I try.
And oh, you're good. You're fine.
Yeah, I don't paint like Giselle, but I have already selected the images that I like, so they're on my bucket list of things to buy.
You can't compare yourself to somebody like her who's a professional.
For sure.
You paint as good as Holly paints. Or as I like to say, somebody in grade 2.
That's accurate.
But my stick men are not great either.
Oh, dear. You know, we all have our strengths. And
this is not mine.
And we're just going to stick with our wheelhouse.
Yeah. Again, we want to remind you, as we're going through this quarantining thing, if you need somebody to talk to reach out, we encourage you to. There's a lot of great mental health specialists. They said that the mental health awareness is up like 60%.
Yeah.
And people needing to talk to someone. We are here to the best of our ability. YBProject@outlook.com. You can reach us on our socials. We peruse that as best as we can as well. So if you need someone, I mean, we are two voices and, you know, four ears that could listen.
Exactly. But we're not professionals.
No, we are not yet. Don't call us seeking professional help.
Yeah.
If you need like a question or like, hey, how are you? And you just need a, we're good. How are you?
Yeah.
We're better for that.
Yeah. That's kind of our, you know, expertise.
That's our wheelhouse.
Yes.
Right? Communication, I mean, we try.
We do.
Trying is lying, I guess. Anyways, you could download on places like Apple Podcasts. You could check out Spotify and Stitcher and SoundCloud. Go to Pure Volume and MySpace. Yeah. You can ask Jeeves, or you could check out whymeproject.com. That's actually not a thing.
No,
don't go there.
Don't go
I don't
there.
Know what that is.
You could go to faithstrongtoday.com,
oh, that's
though,
a good place.
And you'll be able to check out our podcast and all of the other ones we've done over the past 3 years.